In November last year, the BBC was authorised by the government to initiate an experiment in local radio broadcasting in 8 centres in Britain. On November the 8th, the first of these new stations was opened by the Postmaster General at Leicester. Radio Sheffield began broadcasting on November the 15th. And on November the 22nd, local broadcasting began on Merseyside. Since then, BBC local radio stations have opened at Nottingham and Brighton, and shortly, 3 further stations will be opened at Stoke-on-Trent, Leeds and Durham. The programme that follows is an individual and personal assessment of the way the first 3 stations have been working by Tim Matthews.
"Go and have a look at it," said the BBC. So, armed with a typewriter, tape recorder and change of socks, and a BBC producer, off I set. First to Leicester, then Sheffield, on to Manchester to see how it was that the local radio project there had founded, and then on to Merseyside. We talked to as many people as we could. But then, when we got back to London, I said, this is all very well, but it could be said that on this roundabout, I've seen only the people that you, the BBC, have wanted me to see. What I'd like to do is do the whole thing over again by myself and just talk to the people I want to see. All right, said the BBC, good idea, go ahead. So I did. Now, perhaps I should say before we begin that my own attitudes towards local radio when I was first asked to work on this programme were these. I'd worked in local radio in the United States, where I'd enjoyed it immensely. And as a community-building effort, I thought it to be a most admirable thing, in spite of its commercial extravagances. But even without commercials, I didn't see how it could work in Britain.
This is station WGY, Schenectady, New York, signing on for the day.
5:45. Good morning, everybody.
Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. I've got a beautiful feeling. Everything's going my way.
And a good morning to all of you out in WGY land. This Tuesday, the 24th day of January. And we're delighted to see you out there. You're looking bright-eyed and bushy-tailed on this chilly morning. And it is a cool one, 18 degrees, under clear skies, bright moon shining down. And wherever you are, whatever you're doing, we welcome you to our first program of the day, the Chanticleer program. Hope this will be one of your better days all day long. And we'll take a look at the weather, the markets, some sports news and messages from our good sponsors as we go along. But first, wake-up music with the Bristol March.
Compared to America, I thought that, in theory, the BBC's ideas on local radio sounded excruciatingly boring, and I had no wish to get involved with the thing over here in BBC land. But now, having returned from my tour, my own personal view is that, with certain reservations, almost entirely financial, it can work, is listenable to by people in the communities involved, and that, for myself, I would like to work in what seems like an exciting and stimulating atmosphere in at least one of the new stations. This programme, I should say, is not, however, going to end with any stirring conclusions. It'll end with a question rather than an exclamation mark. In many ways, it's much too early to say anything about local radio. It is essentially an experiment, and an experiment which has hardly started. But there are, I think, one or two things to be said already.
I don't like the announcers. I think they lack polish. I think that's my main criticism.
I can't honestly see the object of it. Understand it's going to cost, what, £50,000 a year? The ratepayers' money.
And it's not as good as I hoped. We're hoping to get a new television with a VHF radio combined in the near future, and then we shall listen to it more.
Yeah, I like it. Very much, yeah.
Yeah, I think the programmes should be on the air longer. I think there should be more time given to them. I like this sort of mechanical stuff. It's hard to describe, but it's very unusual what kind of a hobby I've got.
Well, we haven't got VHF on our radio.
I do, but get very poor results. I'm in a multi-story flat, and I wondered if anything could be done about it.
Well, what does this local radio sound like? Well, obviously, the most local thing about local radio is local news.
Time for merry-go-round, and today's edition is full of civic enterprise. Expanding airport, a new community centre, backing Britain. But first, the news, read by Colin Ward-Lewis.
Tomorrow's sports programme for Merseyside has already been hard hit by the weather. Everton's home match against Fulham has been postponed because of the icy pitch at Goodison Park.
The Sheffield Tenants Federation, Mr. Alex McLean, is to have a personal meeting with the Prime Minister next week to discuss the rent rebate row. Mr. McLean will be in a deputation representing the National Tenants Association, and he'll also be raising the question of a possible reduction in interest charges. And in our next edition, we hope to be talking to Mr. McLean in the studio.
A 50-year-old man appeared in court at Ormskirk yesterday, charged with attempting to strangle his 78-year-old mother. The man, William Gibbons of Clucas Gardens, Ormskirk, was remanded in custody until next Friday.
Belton, near Loughborough, told the jury at Leicester Assizes today that on a day of the Belton Horse Fair last May, he had his left ear bitten off by another man. Mr. David Clark said that during the fight in a public house in which he was not involved, a man attacked him for no reason. He came straight for my ear with his mouth and I felt the grip of his teeth, he said. Mr. Clark added that an operation to have his ear stitched back was unsuccessful. He now has a plastic ear which he has to take off at night. The case goes on tomorrow.
Well, that man with a ear would be a good story on any national network. But the rather hesitant delivery of the news does seem to be a built-in fault in local radio. Though some people do say they find this sort of amateurism endearing. I don't particularly. But one thing I do like is the way local radio gets out into the town with its radio car and tape recorder.
We've been here just about a half an hour and there have been three lots of police already down.
Have they? Didn't take long. Did they know you were coming?
No. They have no complaints, but even when they have no complaints about people around, they still come. And when they have complaints, they still come. So it's just equal to us.
Did they? Where have you come from?
From Roundways, just about outside of town.
And were you moved on from there, were you?
Yeah, all day yesterday.
The police. There were five squads there this morning. We've got no breakfast yet.
No breakfast. We can't wash the clothes. The caravans get in an awful state and want to go washing.
There's nobody on board now. The salvage operation seems to be almost complete. And salvage man that I spoke to a few months ago seemed to be quite happy with the job that they'd done. So it looks as though the daffodil is going to be perfectly safe. And in a few hours' time, when the tide has receded completely, she'll be high and dry. But at the moment, she looks rather sad, neglected, and apart from just a few onlookers on the promenade itself, there are very few people. So from the promenade at Seacombe, back to the studios of Radio Merseyside.
Commission, as you know, looking into the whole question of labour relations and labour organisation, strikes, official and unofficial, and so on. But Merseyside's always getting its problems very carefully looked at. Well, for one thing, I was up here, as I've told you before, 6 weeks out of the last seven. Here I am again. There are the local...
Hard news, interviews and reports that would bore the pants off most people nationally. But how's it regarded by the local newsmen? Mr. Watson, Assistant General Manager of Sheffield Newspapers Limited.
I don't think there's any real competition as we first saw it on news. Certainly people who may have a VHF set may have a chance to hear the news first. In that sense, it may act as a contents bill for our newspaper, which is coming out in full detail. I think Radio Sheffield so far has disappointed a lot of people, possibly because of a kind of amateurish approach. I think it's too early to judge. After, what, 3 months? I'd be very sorry to have to be judged on 3 months of bringing out a new newspaper.
At Leicester, the one and only newspaper prefers to adopt a policy of non-cooperation with the local radio station. Though for talking to people, it did seem to me that this somewhat frigid attitude, in fact, was producing a certain sympathy amongst readers for poor, ignored Radio Leicester. The news agency, which supplies the local station with news some 14 hours a day, is headed by someone who listeners to national radio programmes will know, Roland Orton.
We've got six people working, and our job is to supply as good a service, almost, as for local paper. That's our aim. That's our ambition. It's a challenge. And we did wonder at one time whether we should manage it, but so far, after 2.5 months, we've been able to fill every bulletin. I might say so, we haven't really been beaten on the story yet, and we think it's going quite well. I really think, quite sincerely think, that news is one of the most vital things in a radio station. And what we're doing now, apart from the news bulletins, we are going in 4 or 5 times during the morning, 4 or 5 times in the afternoon, with news flashes. The aim is to get news as it happens. And this is what we're able to do.
Radio Merseyside has good relations with the Liverpool Daily Post and Echo. Mr. Crajean is the news editor.
Well, I think local newspapers and local radio in the present concept are more or less complementary. I don't think that the spoken word will ever replace the written word, and I think that after listening to things on the local radio station, people will then want to go home and sit at their leisure, and as far as news is concerned, and read all about it sort of after they've had their evening meal. The Liverpool Daily Post and Echo are in fact providing a news service from all of our own reporting staff to Radio Merseyside.
I must say, it is an extraordinary thing, but the mention of a local borough surveyor's name on the air or the voice of a sanitary inspector has a peculiarly hypnotic effect on local radio. With Sheffield spread out like a map in front of my hotel window, city politics sprang to life as I listened to the local news on the radio by the bed. But although news and news magazines are probably the most compelling programmes, local radio is about communities, and that means programmes for minority audiences. The white paper which authorised this experiment has been criticised for being an extremely vaguely worded document. However, it does clearly state that it was expected that stations would draw upon local talent. On the musical front, Radio Sheffield, for example, called on the Grange Grammar School for a contribution to their weekly programme, The City Sings. Radio Leicester broadcasts a weekly teenage programme called Grain.
Hi there, Grain number 368 is an all-girl affair tonight, apart from me, of course, but I won't be saying much. As usual, in conversations, the women take the floor, so let's get them going. Later on, we'll be hearing from an all-girl singing group. But see if you can...
Later in the programme, we did hear from the group.
We didn't know, said the burgomaster, about the camp on the edge of town. It was Hitler and his crew who tore the German nation down. We saw the cattle carts, it's true, and maybe they carried a Jew or two. They woke us up as they rattled through, but what did you expect me to do? We didn't know at all, we didn't see a thing. You can't hold us to blame, what could we do? It was terrible shame, but we can't bear the blame. Oh no, not us, we didn't know.
A tragic theme which is picked up by the Crofters further west on Radio Merseyside.
Spare a thought for those who starve, spare a thought indeed. What means a little to you now means a lot to those in need.
Radio Merseyside has a special programme for people going back home from work in the evenings, though in view of the number of handy VHF receivers carried about in bus queues or installed in motor cars, I should have thought that this was carrying minority programme just about as far as it can go. However, record request programmes for hospital patients, housewives and children are clearly popular, and programmes do cover a wide range of interests and age groups. 40 years ago, poetry-writing Muriel Levy used to perform on local radio in Liverpool. She's still at it.
Would you kindly direct me to Commerce House? I do want to see it, although I'm a mouse.
The first on the right and then follow your nose, the policeman replied, though I do not suppose his remarks were addressed to our mousey at all, for really a mouse is too timid and small to make himself heard in such noise and such din. Still, he found the right door, and he scampered straight in to Merseyside House.
In Leicester, they have a special programme for immigrants.
You remember that last week we were talking about the Muslim festival of Eid al-Fitr and the month of fasting which precedes it. Well, on Sunday, I was invited by Dr. Saeed, who was one of our speakers last week, to an Eid party which was held at his house by the Women's International Friendship Club. This is a club where English and Asian women can meet socially, and they take it in turns to entertain each other. Being Eid, it was the turn of the Pakistanis, and they had prepared a wide variety of delicious Pakistani food.
Well, back in Merseyside, they have a special program for ex-servicemen. Now, there goes the duty bugler with a post-call for our announcements. The National Reunion of the Far Eastern Prisoners of War Association will take place on Saturday the 27th of April, 1968, at the Winter Gardens, Blackpool. The names of those interested in going are required as soon as possible to Eddie Harrison or any member of the committee.
Holman, parish priest of St. Mary's, Highfield Street, has been elected abbot of the Benedictine Abbey at Fort Augustus in Inverness. He is succeeded at St. Mary's by Father Sebastian Moore, the theologian and author, who has also been at Highfield Street for several years. The Metropolitan Cathedral of Christ the King is now being closed to the public at 7 o'clock each evening in the winter and 8 in the summer. A few people tended to visit the building during the winter.
Someday, when the winter is over, someday,
and away with the music for a minute. Anyway, we've got the first caller on the swap shop this afternoon, Mr. John Atkinson. Hello, Mr. Atkinson.
All the afternoon.
Now, what have you got on offer?
I have a tape recorder.
A tape recorder? What kind of a tape recorder? Is it in good nick?
Yes, it's quite good. It's about 4 or 5 years old, but it's not had much use.
And what would you like in exchange for that, Mr. Atkinson?
I'd like a camera, a 35mm reflex, please.
A 35mm camera. Reflex... Yeah, I'll just write that down. Okay, we'll see what we can fix you up with, Mr. Atkinson.
Right, thanks very much indeed.
Okay, thanks for ringing. Bye. So if anybody's interested in that at all, give us a ring, 66185, not now, please, 5 o'clock. Now, back to the music. And the most exciting news for Sheffield anglers is something everybody can look forward to. The Lincoln Association, at their annual meeting this week, have decided to open all their waters to day ticket visitors, a break with a long tradition for Lincoln celebrate their 100th anniversary next year, and have kept their fishing for members only ever since their formation.
Gentlemen, it's a marvellous piece of 19th century mechanism, and it's from the house of a very old Retford family. Now, what am I going to say for the automaton acrobat, which is accompanied to the tune of Toreador from Carmen and other fine classical music? Now, there he is, £100. All right, £100. I'll go very steadily. £100 and 10, 20, 30.
And, like the lots of an auction, the variety of programmes offered by local radio is very wide. I don't think there's anything particularly local in a Physical Jerks programme which they're running from Radio Merseyside. Anyway, you've just heard a few extracts from some of the programmes. While I was zooming round the stations, I found some of them rejigging their programme schedules slightly in the light of their experience in the first few months of operation. Leicester was the first station I visited, and there I spoke with Maurice Ennals, who's the station manager, and I asked him, since there was no feedback from a local newspaper, if he was able to get any response from the Leicester public.
Yes, quite a lot. We have been averaging about 200 letters a week, about 50 to 60 incoming phone calls a day, and since we opened, we've had well over 1,000 visitors to the station.
Bob Kennedy, the man in charge of programme output at Leicester, told me that he found people listening more at weekends than he imagined. I asked him if he'd had to change any other ideas.
Yes, I think one always wants to do far more than it is possible to do. There is a fantastic amount of material, locally, which perhaps we didn't ever think about before. But we knew we'd got a big job on, and we knew that we hadn't got enough staff or equipment or money or anything else to do it with. So therefore, it's a case of cutting down and cutting back to our resources. We've got enough, certainly, to work within the restrictions of the experiment, and that is to work a station of this size with this equipment in this environment. But of course, we want to do so much more, and we can do so much more. So therefore, we want more equipment, more staff, more money.
The Lord Mayor of Leicester is Alderman Sir Mark Hennig.
I'm quite certain that the type of programme that is being put out on local radio is something that appeals to people in the localities. Of course, the fact that VHF is being used is something of a deterrent, but nevertheless, people do listen to local issues and like to hear them ventilated. We've had two recently. We've altered our ceremonies at the Remembrance Day parade. Some people didn't like what we had done. The opportunity was given to those running the show to explain their reasons. We've recently had an argument as to whether or not the streets of Leicester were cleared as expeditiously as there might have been after the recent snowfalls. Here again, those responsible were able to put the facts forward. They could be discussed by other people and conclusions reached on facts, not merely on hearsay.
Professor Simmons of the University of Leicester is the chairman of the local broadcasting council that's been set up to advise on the running of the local station.
One of the criticisms that I think we have to meet at the moment is that, for instance, there is no local broadcasting in the evening after about 7:30. And one of the things that does encourage me very much is that, for instance, in December, we decided that we were going to establish advisory panels for educational and for religious broadcasting. And we spent a lot of time in discussing who should be on these. Well, when we did, in fact, issue the invitations to people, altogether about 25 people on the, for the two, every single person who was invited accepted. This seemed to be a very encouraging sign that there was a real interest in the work we were trying to do.
One of the things I found on my trip, by the way, was how very different all the stations are. From Leicester, I went up to Sheffield. And at Sheffield, the station manager is Michael Barton.
Well, we average about just under 4 hours a day. So that's 7 times 4, 28 hours a week for 5 producers, which is quite a task.
Are you able to put out 4 hours a day easily, or is this a strain on your staff?
It is a bit of a strain because the chaps are having to be terribly versatile. One day a producer, we call them programme assistants, he has to be a producer of current affairs programmes and do some pretty hard digging. The next day he may be presenting record programme and becoming a DJ, in which his own personality is the thing that matters. And the next day he may be a reporter for a news programme and so on. So that this versatility, this changing round, certainly causes a bit of a problem. But we are finding now is that these producers are adapting themselves well to these skills.
But if you produce more than 4 hours a day, presumably everybody would blow up, would they?
We couldn't honestly do very much more than 4 hours a day with the staff we've got. But what local radio can do and must do is to draw from the people of Sheffield. And we are now currently trying to draw from as many units as possible to do this. For example, we've been considering doing a programme in Urdu. The Pakistanis are particularly interested in doing this. They will come to the studio once a week, present their own programme. Now, local radio could come to a halt if it didn't draw from the community, but that's what we're here for, to draw from them and give them encouragement. And this is what we're doing as far as we possibly can.
But I wonder how many potential Urdu-speaking VHF owners there are in Sheffield. Leader of the Labour Group of Sheffield City Council is Alderman Ron Ironmonger.
The major problem the members of the City Council have bumped into is the manner in which the station staff, the new staff, attempt to collar hold of us and the difficulties it creates. Obviously, they're hunting for news and they pounce on you at work in the middle of the day and expect you to be able to drop your pencil or your spanner and tear off to Westbourne Road. Well, of course, it's not quite as easy as that. And these are things that local radio reporters have got to learn to adjust their circumstances to the new circumstances in which they're moving in.
What does the council think of the local radio station?
Well, it with mixed feelings. Some members of the council obviously regard it with some suspicion, as some members always regard any medium of publicity with suspicion. But generally speaking, it's been welcomed. We've had some disagreement over one or two of the presentations. A week or two ago, one of the local radio reporters We thought attempted to take the mickey out of the member of the council a little bit too much, and we discussed this with the station manager, and we seemed to arrive at an amicable arrangement. It probably hurt our dignity a little, but...
The local radio is not just becoming a yes-man to the council.
Oh, anything but. No, it's presenting both sides very strongly and obviously created a tremendous amount of interest.
Although educational broadcasting hasn't yet started, the chief education officer of Sheffield, Mr. Harrison, sees local radio helping the schools in the city.
First, I think we see it helping us in our primary and secondary schools, supporting and enlarging the area of aid that the radio already gives to teachers in schools in the classroom situation by enriching it with local material and concerning local history and geography, topography and so on. Also, I think we're very interested in the help that local radio is likely to be able to give us in our in-service training programme for teachers and curriculum development.
This clearly must be a cooperative effort. What are you doing from your end?
We have a certain number of VHF sets in our schools already, but we hope to equip them completely with the money we hope we shall get from the corporation and the rates during the next financial year. In other words, by the beginning of the school year, we shall have a VHF set in every primary and secondary school in the city.
On the Merseyside scene, the station manager is Michael Hancock, who talked to me about the difficulties he faces in creating a local style.
I'd like to extend our programme hours, of course. This is one sadness in our taking from the sustaining networks, Radio 1, 2, 3 and 4, and it's difficult to impose or create a style of presentation which is purely Merseyside when you have to take from Radio 1... which is pop, Radio 2, the old light, Radio 3, which we take some of, not a great deal, and Radio 4, the old home service. Now, here are four different styles of presentation. We, in local radio, are the most important style because it's your station, but to try and marry these styles, these five styles of presentation together and create a real sense of identity, this is the problem and the challenge.
The Dean of Liverpool, the very Reverend Edward Patey, is very involved in local radio's possibilities.
We've got this Blues Advisory Panel, which I chair, and up to now our job has been to find speakers for the daily programmes. Now we're sitting back and saying, well, look here, this is all very well, but this isn't radio at its most exciting. We're beginning to try to work out now ways in which we might use radio more creatively for the purposes of religion and religious opinion.
How do you think you might do this?
I think probably really effective documentary techniques, trying to do kind of sound radio 24 hours, if you know what I mean, really bringing the stuff of the local Christian community to life, rather than just dishing out 4.5 minutes of pious uplift twice a day, which is what we're tending to do at the moment.
Is it uncovering creative talent, do you think?
Very much so, you see. In this first couple of months, we've had people on the air every day, many of whom have never been inside a radio studio before, never broadcast before, and we've had some very high standard talks, I think a lot higher than some of the talks which have come out from Radio 4 with expert production. The station itself has a kind of almost the kind of feel of an old-fashioned local newspaper office where people just breeze in and out. And I was in the studio the other day. I walked into the studio. I didn't know it was on the air. And quite casually, the continuity man said, oh, here's the Dean. Hello, Dean. And you're broadcasting without even knowing you're doing it. And I think this very casual, I think there's a great deal of skill behind it, but this very casual approach brings out the best in people, in which more efficient and rather terrifying production techniques doesn't always do.
The Lord Mayor of Liverpool, Mrs. Wormwald.
What I really love about it is the homely side of it, the kind of programme we have, for example, Up Your Street once a week, which to me is really bringing almost Coronation Street situation into real life, that these are the real people and that this is bound. And also they will feature openings of, for example, they did Paddy's Market when it had been removed to a new site and I did the opening. And they really brought this to life terrifically. And so in that way, I'm sure that it's adding to people's interest in their own town.
What criticisms would you have of it?
Well, I have one or two. The first is, of course, that unfortunately can only be got on VHF. And if people haven't got it, then they just can't hear it. The other criticism is that it's terribly difficult to try to memorise the times at which the Merseyside will come on. Now, I think perhaps a little publicity in the Radio Times might make people realise that it's not so difficult to be hearing it. I think that a third criticism might be, inevitably there are teething troubles, and perhaps this is because of they're a new team who has come together, there are little hitches in the programmes and so on. But another criticism would be that perhaps they should give more time to things that we couldn't possibly get on any other programme. In other words, real Merseyside matter.
Every station is putting out police call programmes and traffic information, but Liverpool is taking cooperation a stage further. Here's the Chief Constable.
As I see Radio Merseyside and this type of communication with the public, I think that it is a good extension of our own police communication system to tell the public what is happening and when it is happening. Immediately it is happening, so that we can get their assistance.
How are you able to do this, practically speaking?
Well, at the moment, of course, we send one of our inspectors from Information Room to Radio Merseyside, which, of course, is a delay. And what we are doing at this very moment is preparing a small broadcasting studio of our own in Police Information Room, so that we cut down on the time lag and we tell the public immediately something is happening.
In Manchester, there's no local radio. The project founded on the question of finance. And finance is, as far as I can see, following my tour around, the crucial thing in this whole local radio business. Voted in by a Labour administration in Manchester, local radio was rejected when the Conservatives gained power in that city.
I don't think it's any part of local government's responsibility to spend their ratepayers' money in entering into this field or in any way financing or subsidising programmes by the BBC.
But how would you like to see local radio financed then?
Well, it should either be provided by the BBC, or if they cannot afford it, then there should be commercial radio stations.
All this could be looked at, but first of all you've got to have your experimental period. And I submit... And that it would be good value for money for a local authority to be able to inform the electorate of the things that it's doing and the reasons for doing them, and even provide forums where local problems and local possible solutions could be discussed freely with anybody who cared to listen as the audience. This would be money well spent by the ratepayers in order to get the interest of the ratepayers in the local authority and the happenings and the doings of the city council. We spend more than this now. We are using ratepayers' money, in effect, in order to get our message across. And it's money well spent.
This became a point of the Conservative election platform, that at a time when the rates were threatened with a rapid rise, when every other cost in life was rising, we said to the public, we do not think it is correct that we should take 50,000 of your money to subsidise the BBC. And by their votes, the public showed their opinion. Mm. You lost 16 seats.
Yeah. A couple of good broadcasters lost to Manchester. In Leicester, Councillor Toft is chairman of the General Purposes Committee of the Conservative-controlled local authority.
Well, at the present time, the local authority have underwritten the cost of local radio £52,000 per annum for 2 years. The Postmaster General thought that we might get assistance from outside sources. This is something which I have never shared. I've never had the faith in that. But the local government have arranged to underwrite for 2 years the £52,000 per annum.
How do you see local radio being financed satisfactorily in the future?
It has been thought in certain circles this could be done by an additional to the wireless licence. I do not share this view because it would have to have national coverage if it were to be fair. The only other way is for the BBC to underwrite it, although I tend to lean myself that I believe the future will be some form of commercial advertising.
Is there enough money at present in the experiment in Leicester to finance the expansion into educational programmes? Professor Simmons, chairman of the local broadcasting council.
We're not financially worried. We've got enough to run the station on, as things are during this experimental period. The whole thing, of course, is within this two-year context. And what we haven't got, as it seems to be enough for, is the full measure of development that we really want to see. And this is where the council, which represents a very broad cross-section of people in Leicester, is beginning to get to work, and I think get to work very effectively.
Does Sheffield think it's getting its money's worth? Alderman Ron Ironmonger again, leader of the Labour group on the council.
No, I hope we're not yet getting our money's worth, because we hope to see it continue to improve. I'm not saying that in a derogatory sense, because it is worth the money we're paying. We've already had some arguments as to how much we should contribute, but the City Council have agreed to underwrite the £50,000 per year while the experiment's proceeding. And I hope, judging on this very early experience, that local radio will prove that it can run itself without having to be financed from other sources. Because already the freedom that's expressed and shown by the runners of the station proves that it's much better than being influenced by people who are contributing towards its well-being through advertising, etc.
As in Sheffield, the local authorities on Merseyside are paying the costs. But I asked the chairman of the local broadcasting council, Mr. Norman Cave, who's also managing director of Camel Laird, if local industry would be prepared to chip in.
No one, an industry in particular, is willing to put his hand in his pocket before he knows what he's buying. I think that if this station does what the station staff and what the local broadcasting council intend it will do in the course of the next year, I am confident that the programme output from Radio Merseyside will be sufficiently all-embracing, sufficiently interesting, and will have an enormous impact on the whole of the local community. And I believe that when that time is reached, industry and other bodies will be prepared to make a contribution to the cost of running the station, which, when all said and done, is the best mass means of communication one can have.
How does the BBC feel about the financial arrangements? The BBC's director of radio, Frank Gillard.
It's too soon to say. The white paper under which we're operating this experiment makes it plain that this is an important element of the experiment. Do people want local broadcasting? Can local stations be an amenity that is welcome in a community? And secondly, can they be paid for by the community in this sort of manner? If we find out that the answer to the financing is no, they can't be paid for in this sort of way, well, then we'd have to think of other ways of financing them, I suppose. The government made this quite clear in the white paper. And it is too soon to say, and despite all the derision that's been heaped on the white paper and its proposals, that the fact is that in these centres we are getting contributions from local authorities, we are getting contributions from industry, we are getting contributions from all sorts of directions, as indicated in the white paper. Will this come to enough? We don't know yet. Will it happen in enough places? We don't know yet. But we shall know in another year or so.
Meanwhile, I've had my look round. And my own assessment is that local radio is often boring, frequently amateur, almost always parochial, and on occasion embarrassing. But it's wonderful too. The parochialism which jars on a city slicker from out of town is in fact a most excellent thing. Parish pump politics are by no means boring if you happen to live next door to the village pump. Local radio is already making a positive contribution to local communities, as far as it goes. But on £50,000 a year per station, it only goes about 4 hours a day. It is the financing of the thing which must, and I'm sure can, in some way be sorted out. Because for local radio to founder would, I think, be a tragedy.
Radio Goes Local was introduced by Tim Matthews and produced by Roy Haywood.